Welcome. Thank you all for joining us here at the Bank of America Technology Conference. I'm Wamsi Mohan. I'm the IT Hardware and Technology Supply Chain Analyst here at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Delighted to welcome HP Inc. First time to the conference as the new HP Inc. entity. We're delighted to have Ron Coughlin, who is SVP and GM of Personal Systems at HP Inc. Ron's been with the company for 9 years and has a long history prior to that at Pepsi. In the 9 years, he's had various roles both on the PC and print side. Today, we'll be primarily focused on the PC side. So welcome, Ron. Thanks for taking the time.
Great to be here. Is there some hazing ritual for a first-timer?
We'll get into that shortly.
All right.
I think with PCs, you sort of already encountered that on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's a daily life reality. All right.
So, I'd like to draw everyone's attention just to the forward-looking statements that might be addressed during this presentation. So, Ron, just to kick it off, PC market's been sort of tough. Q1 IDC data was actually quite weak. You guys did significantly better than sort of where the market was sort of expecting. So can you just set the stage a little bit and talk about Q2 results, how you're looking at the next couple of quarters in the near term from a PC perspective?
Yeah. Q2 really was a manifestation of what we said at SAM, which is we remain confident and optimistic. Confident in that whether the market is fair or foul, we're going to execute. And if you look at Q2, we did have a softer market than we anticipated, but we executed. We gained share overall. Most importantly, we gained share where we said we'd gain share, which is commercial PCs, our highest share ever in commercial PCs. We delivered against key strategic areas like commercial services, commercial mobility. We continue to innovate in the marketplace. We announced great-looking devices like the Spectre 13, the Folio. We took Sprout to commercial markets. So we executed against what we said we were going to do. If you look at the year, there's an interesting change that happens. In the first half of the year, the headwinds are quite strong. As we go through the year, we anticipate an alleviating environment. A couple of things change. First, in the first half of the year, we were overlapping the Bing program from Microsoft and the Stream program a year ago, which is, in essence, a Windows Cloud Book. Both of those were massive programs a year ago. In Q3, Q4, in our fiscal, we actually overlapped those. So that should be an alleviation of the headwind. The other headwind that we've seen is the free upgrade from Windows. There are a portion of those that took that upgrade that would have otherwise bought a PC. We know that factually. When that rolls off in July, we see that as another headwind that turns into a tailwind in the second half. And then lastly, the innovation portfolio that we have is second to none. I meet with all the major retailers, the Best Buys, the Dixons of the world, all the major channel partners, CDW, Synnex, et cetera. And everybody says we have the best portfolio in the markets. We anticipate being able to gain share in that market.
So, Ron, when you look at the back half of the year, you alluded to a couple of headwinds that you don't expect will persist. Can you size those for us? So in Q2, you had 10 points constant currency decline, so 5 points constant currency decline. Can you talk about how you're thinking about the magnitude of those headwinds that you will lap here in the next couple of quarters?
We have our own internal models. I'd rather cite IDC. IDC sees a 3 to 4 point improvement in the second half of the year based upon the dynamics that I talked about. And that's not that far away from a category standpoint of what we see, those factors alleviating as we go through the year.
OK, great. There's a lot of concern just around the rate of PC decline. If you look at 2015, it was double digit. 2016 started off again as a year where people were expecting a moderate decline. It seems like the expectations have gotten worse into maybe a high single digit decline currently. What is it that you see can change this trajectory in the PC market? I mean, clearly for you, you guys are taking share. But for the industry overall, where do you see the trajectory sort of in terms of growth over the next several years.
Yeah. So let me start wide and I'll narrow in. If you start at the macro view, our total addressable market as a personal systems business is roughly $340 billion. About half of that, a little over half of that, is PCs. And the other half is what I'll call PC adjacencies, whether that be thin clients, whether that be displays, accessories, workstations. If we take the PC portion of that first, that's roughly a 3 or 4% growth business on a long-term basis. Within that, we need to do two things. Gain share, which we've proven we can do, and second, improve mix. And great examples of mix improvement is 2 years ago, we had relatively no presence in the premium part of the category, which is a higher profit. Today, we actually are doubling our business, and we're taking 3 to 4 share points away from Apple. Okay? 2 years ago, we had no presence in gaming. Again, we doubled our business on gaming, and we've made some major announcements. Commercial mobility, we had a negligible business, and we're growing those. So if you take the PC category, growing 4%, our job is to grow share within that, and then find pockets of growth and pockets of profitability, which we've proven we can do. On top of that is this PC adjacency, which is a little less than half of the $340 billion. That's growing 9%. Right? So that is, again, workstations, services, displays, accessories. We need to build more of that into our portfolio. And I'm happy to say we increased our penetration of attach of accessories, displays in the last quarter, and services. So we've proven we can do that.
Can you talk a little bit about these, like what metrics do you track on attach? Where are we in sort of the bigger picture spectrum of where attach rates can go versus where we are today?
Yeah, every week we look at attach across accessories, displays, services, and there's really two drivers. One is, to what extent are we making sure they're bundled and doing a great job at the point of sale? But the second thing is making our portfolio better and better. So we've announced things like curved displays, new charging opportunities, docking, wireless docking, to bring innovation and to drive that penetration rate. But more broadly, I know the headlines are all about the declines, but if you look at within the story within the story, in Q2, our commercial notebook business grew. Our mobile workstation business grew. Our mobility business grew. Our commercial services business grew. Our premium business grew. Our gaming business grew. So we have a lot of profit accretive segments that are actually on the positive trajectory.
When you think about the aggregate install base out there of PCs, can we just talk about what is the trajectory of this install base? If you could break that down maybe into commercial and consumer, we can maybe talk about a couple of different slices, how you view it. But is the install base something that you think has growth to it, or are there components of growth, components of decline, and you're aligning the portfolio accordingly?
Yeah, there's a lot of, in some ways, discrepant forces on the install base. The bad news is the install base isn't going to grow. The good news is the install base isn't going to decline either when you take into account detachables. What we're seeing is detachables and convertibles are roughly 30 to 40% preferred versus laptops. We're also seeing a 10 to 15% faster refresh rate on those devices than traditional laptops. So you have a relatively static install base. The real story here is the 600 million plus PCs that are over 4 years old. So can you bring that device? So if you have a device that's over 4 years old, what you have is a device that oftentimes looks like this. Some of you might still be carrying this device, right? And you probably have to go to a chiropractor when you get back to your house. Versus the device that we announced 2 weeks ago, and there's a commercial analog there, maybe you can hold up the folio, that is the world's thinnest and lightest device. So if you look at it purely on a size basis, you're seeing benefits. If you look on a weight basis, you're seeing benefits. If you look at a battery life, this device here has 10 to 12 hours of battery life on that type of form factor. This device might not work till you get to Salt Lake City. How many of you had to put away your PCs on the flight out here? Right? If you had the detachable right there, you wouldn't have had to put away the PC because when the flight attendants had put it away, you would have had the ability to take it apart and put your keyboard like I did. So we have a series of elements that we believe can drive the refresh. 600 million PCs over 4 years old. We have a great operating system in Win 10. We think when the free upgrade backs off, that'll be a positive catalyst. You have Intel with more powerful battery life chips in Skylake and follow-on. And then, you know, the PC ecosystem hasn't had this much innovation in decades, whether it's convertibles, whether it's detachables, whether it's a curved all-in-one. You have a lot of innovation, and so I see it as the ecosystem's job to drive that refresh. I grew up marketing at Pepsi. That's the type of challenge that I relish, is getting those, you know, 4-plus-year-old PCs and bringing this innovation to bear.
Yeah, those are some really impressive products. I mean, we've not seen sort of, I think MacBook Air was the first to sort of demonstrate, but these products are as light, if not lighter, than the MacBook Air, the one you just handed me, so.
I won't tout my our own, but go look at the press. Basically, they said that this device beat the Apple devices. Right.
When you think about sort of innovation in that context, would you say that, you know, you obviously split into two companies, would you say that the PC business was underinvested in over the last few years? What's your perspective on the split more broadly and how you're positioned today?
I've run the consumer business for, I think, 3.5, 4 years, and then I picked up the commercial business over a year ago. So I've run parts of the PC business for 3.5, 4 years within HP. I've always see myself running a P&L and managing levers of the P&L. I never saw an underinvestment. I do think that the split has enabled us to be faster, nimbler, more focused. I think some of our competitors, what's happening with some of our competitors is showing the downside of being defocused. So I think that we're more focused, we're faster. We eat what we kill. Whether there's investment or not investment, that's not something that I've thought a lot about.
Maybe this is a good segue into the competitive landscape. Would you say that you've had, you've been able to take any advantage of the disruptions that have been happening at sort of Dell EMC, or also if you could talk about the results, your APAC results were actually quite good. You saw mm-hmm. Lenovo quite weak. Maybe some thoughts around those.
We actually grew in constant currency in APAC last quarter, which is a great testament, and you could imagine who the main competitor is in APAC. We continue to gain commercial share against our competitors, which is what we said we would do. We continue to, according to most experts, out-innovate the competition. So, you know, with what's going on in Austin, we believe that the PC business will be a smaller piece of of that company, as well as the integration will detract some focus. If you look at what's happened for Lenovo, you know, that seems to have held true with the acquisitions of Motorola and the server business. So we see lots of opportunities. You look at a great microcosm of this is premium, right? Within Windows Premium, we were undershared. You look at the last 2 years, and we have massively upped our share of premium from those competitors as well as from Apple, and it's a great microcosm of the opportunity. Another microcosm would be our share gains in China. We are gaining share, which we weren't up until a couple of years ago.
What has been the strategy that's driven those share gains in China?
Our general manager of China, you know, his quote, I'll misquote it, but it's only the fundamentals. Mm. You know, driving the fundamentals, your relationship with your channel partners, your footprint, being smart about where you're allocating resources. It's more on the commercial side. Our commercial is our strength there. And just executing against the fundamentals, your relationship with your channel partners, the products you bring to the channel partners, delivering them on time, that's commercial. On consumer, we've taken advantage of the massive shift to online, and we've really built relationships with players like JD.com. And actually, just yesterday, I was getting headlines. Keep me honest here. It was we did 5,000 in 3 minutes of our brand new gaming device, the Omen 15. 5,000 gaming devices in 3 minutes on JD.com. So when you get it right, you really get the return on that. And needless to say, you know, you don't have to have a lot of salespeople going up and down the street when you're working with JD.com.
Yeah, yeah. Do you see virtual reality as something that boosts PC sales? What time frame?
I don't mean to sound like Donald Trump, but we love virtual reality. we love it end to end. First, a lot of the virtual reality games are built on, guess what? HP workstation,
yes.
Right? We are the leading provider for virtual reality creation. So it drives demand for our high capability devices on the workstation side of the business. Then when you shift over to the demand side of the house, we announced the partnership with HTC Vive, which is, you know, recognized as probably the hottest device in the space. Our Phoenix Tower is the top complement to that device. What's great about it is it takes, you know, lots of power, the highest end Intel chips, the highest end graphics, whether those are AMD or NVIDIA. So those are premium devices with premium margins. So we love that business. And then even more exciting, last week we announced the world's first, so there was someone else who announced at the same time, a VR backpack. Because part of the limitor to gaming has been that you had to be tethered. So we had a VR backpack that we announced last week. There were two of us announced last week in advance of Computex. And if you read the reviews, we were clearly the preferred device. So we're really excited about that.
Speaking about innovation, I mean, you've been able to obviously deliver products like these, which are based on SSDs clearly. Can you just talk about at a high level where your SSD penetration is as part of, you know, overall PCs and notebooks specifically, and where do you think that goes over the next several years?
Yeah, we try not to paint the market with one brush. Dion has talked about the rigor of our heat maps across every geography. So where it makes sense to make the shift to SSD, at the macro level, there is a shift as SSD. It's one of those things as the cost comes down, it's more usable. But we very, very tightly manage price feature value. So when that price feature value pays off, we're shifting to SSD. When it doesn't, we stay with traditional.
You addressed this a little bit before in terms of taking share, but the market sort of consolidated sort of the top, call it four or five players, with top three having significant share. What's your perspective on how many PC players ultimately survive? And you know, you already seen some drop off in some of the, at least some of the Asian players drop off or exit the market. And where do you go when you consolidate to such few players? And ultimately, is there actually going to be any pricing power in PCs?
Yeah, so there's still a lot of room in the PC category. Beyond the top four, there's still a lot of share that others have, which is, I think, good news for us. If you look at the last couple years, the top four have gained 1 to 2 share points pretty much every quarter. We see that trend continuing. Scale matters in this industry. We ship one PC every 1.7 seconds. So scale matters. It matters with our ODM partners. It matters with our logistic partners. It matters when you show up at CDW or Best Buy or Harvey Norman or JD.com. So scale matters, and the top four, in our view, will continue to gain share over time for that reason. We also have the innovation engines to keep up. I mean, it is taxing on an engineering organization to have to, deal with convertibles, detachables, curved, and the ability to generate that type of innovation takes a high-powered innovation engine that it's hard to find outside the top four.
Can you talk a little bit about the cash conversion cycle of the business? I mean, obviously, negative cash conversion, great when the business is growing, not so great when it's not. So how are you managing and thinking about this dynamic?
You sound like my boss.
Sorry.
So first, we work hard to make sure we have that negative cash conversion cycle. And if you look at what happened in Q2, it paid results. Kathy was clear at SAM that we would target, in 15, we had a negative cash conversion cycle of negative 19 days. We targeted a 2-day improvement, and in Q2, we showed up, I believe, with a 24, negative 24. So that was positive and ahead of projections.
Yes.
As they said on the earnings, we put a lot of effort into that. First, My primary job is to deliver operating profit. So whether it is generating innovation to drive top line, whether it is the mix, positive mix management in terms of premium gaming, other elements of our portfolio, whether it's the cost efforts. We took out $1 billion of cost in 2015, and we are hyper-aggressive on cost in 16 as well. What Kathy talked about in the earnings is on top of all that, we put in some specific processes to manage cash. Things like shifting volume from suppliers or ODMs with less favorable terms to more favorable terms. Things like chasing receivables more aggressively. Things like working linearity within the quarter. And as you could see in the results in Q2, those pay dividends, and you know, those will be in place for Q3, Q4.
Can you talk about sort of the linearity on the quarter? How was the linearity in the quarter? And if you think about some of the skew relative to IDC, would you say that Jan was exceptionally weak and April was somewhat better, and that contributed to part of sort of the outperformance? And how would you characterize linearity in general?
Yeah, I don't think there was anything remarkable on linearity in the quarter. You know, where you see the real linearity issues is when you have a operating system change, a chip change, some new program like the Bings of the world. We have swings back and forth every quarter that we manage from. There was nothing remarkable that I would cite on a linearity standpoint.
And then just to touch on margins, I mean, 3.5% EBIT margins.
Again, sorry, when you look at year ago linearity, you need to go look. Bing was a stochastic moment in the PC. A lot of business got pulled in because of the Bing program. And then later because of our, what we call the stream book, but in general, Windows cloud books. So you need to go look at what happened last year on those to dissect things on your linearity, month-to-month linearities.
Also, maybe it'll be a good time to just ask about your perspective on FX, right? How much has FX played a role in sort of what has happened over the last 18 months in PCs?
Well, if you look at Q2, right, our nominal revenue was negative 10, and our constant currency was negative 5. So that's had an impact on the business. We do hedging. We're not as hedged as we would be on the supplies side of the business. Sometimes I pine for my old days running the laser jet business, but we do hedge, but we do get pricing coverage on some of the currency, and then you know we pride ourselves, as I said, on execution. So when we see that, we double down on our cost structure work, we double down on our mix work to make sure we offset as much as we can. And in Q2, we were pretty effective in offsetting some of that.
Do you think that the changing in pricing has had negative demand impact?
I do. Yeah. I do. And that's another reason why, as you go into the back half of the year, that overlap of currency looks more favorable as well. The industry, forget about HP, the industry had to take currency-driven pricing a year ago. I think that did soften demand at the industry level.
Right. From a margin perspective, you had 3.5% EBIT margin here last quarter. What are some of the levers that you're looking at? I mean, obviously, you know, Diana's mentioned in the past that on the PC side, you know, the business is fairly meticulous about looking at the bill of materials and drills down into a fair level of detail into how to optimize that. Maybe not so much on the printing side yet, and it's coming, but on the PC side, what do you think are the incremental levers? I mean, clearly attach could be one of those, but could you just talk about what could be margin enhancing?
Yeah. So we start with mix, right? We very actively drive mix. And I would say that this is a muscle that has really accelerated over the last 2 years. As I said, we had negligible premium business, we had negligible gaming business. Those are categories that are profit accretive for us. So the fact that we doubled them in Q2 is really encouraging. So whether it's those, whether it's commercial mobility, whether it's mobile workstation, those are all positive mix moves for us. The second thing is we drive cost 24/7. I came for the laser jet business. It, you know, after my first 3 to 6 months, what I realized is you wake up and worry about cost every day in this industry. If you're not cost competitive, you're not competitive, period. So we wake up and we work costs. We set up cost teams on both the consumer team and the commercial team who work, you know, bombs before we launch, bombs after we launch. And an example I used at SAM is going from 10 connectors to 4 connectors for ports. Sounds like a small thing. It's only pennies, but pennies times millions is how we do this stuff. And we look for these every day. Last week in Taipei, or 2 weeks ago in Taipei, a smart young cost engineer showed me that he could take away a bracket that held in the panel, and we were gonna get 20 cents a device, again, times millions of devices, so we have people working that 24/7. The logistics environment's been favorable with oil, so we work that cost end of things. That said, there are pressures on the low end of the market, particularly EDU Chromebooks, and particularly some of the opening price points in consumer, that we are constantly balancing the mix positive with what we want to do from a competition standpoint at those price points to drive our revenue and drive our cash flow.
VDI comes up sometimes as threat towards PCs. What's your viewpoint on VDI? Do you view it as potentially something that could be a broader solution in enterprises, or do you view it as sort of a point solution for certain things that's more niche-y?
Yeah, my friend from your company, Bank of America in the back, talked a little about VDI earlier today to me in terms of internal to Bank of America IT. It is a trend. I've probably been in front of 30 to 50 enterprise customers in the last 2 or 3 months. Nobody is talking about going wholesale to that type of environment. It is kind of a slow drip trend. We have the world's leading thin client business. We have a leading Chromebook business. And actually, can you bring me the X3? At Mobile World Congress, we announced this device and the dock, which is the X3, which is a phablet, but it also has what's called a lap dock, which is basically a laptop without compute, because you use this as your compute, so you have one compute device. But when you dock it, it becomes a desktop with a display at your desk, and we virtualize all the enterprise's applications. So where virtualization is now, we have a great portfolio, but we also believe we're revolutionizing where it's going, and we're really excited. And actually, this was the darling of Mobile World Congress with 24 best of shows at Mobile World Congress.
Yeah, it looks pretty impressive. I wanted to ask you about synergies between PC and print. I mean, your sister company here just went through another split. How do you think about the synergies between PC and print? Could we see those separate?
I'm a big printer, so I'd be bummed out if I had to pay more for ink next week. when we show up to Best Buy, when we show up to CDW, when we show up to large accounts like Bank of America, we have an account general manager that looks after both of our businesses, and we get a lot of synergy there. We have synergy in terms of bundling, and so there is quite a bit of synergy. Dion got asked this question on our earnings, and he was clear that the personal systems business is strategic to HPI, so my job is to make sure that the personal systems is as attractive as possible, and that's what I get up to do every day.
Are there any questions here in the audience? We have a few minutes here. Back there, please.
Hi, thank you. In this competitive market environment, can you comment on to what extent are you speccing up your SKUs of PCs, and what elements of your specs are maybe are you upgrading, and can you speak specifically to memory and storage?
Yeah, so you are seeing a shift SSD within our portfolio. It's really a tale of two cities. I talked about our premium and our gaming. So what that results in is more i7s. What that results in is more NVIDIA graphics, discrete graphics within our portfolio. At the same time, you have entrance, some B brands from Shenzhen attacking the low end, and there, you need to spec down to compete against those types of devices to the extent you want to compete against them. So it's really a tale of two cities within the portfolio.
And how about with the specific DRAM, are you expecting on that across your
again, on the higher end devices, which we are mix shifting towards, the answer is yes.
One up here, please.
Hi, two questions. First, on tablets, do you think in general there are just too many tablets on the market? And for HP, does it make sense to continue to invest in that space versus commercial notebooks?
Yeah.
And the second question is, can you give us your thoughts on touch on notebooks? I mean, what is the penetration there? Companies are coming out with OLED displays. Just your thoughts. I mean, is that a viable feature that can drive sales for you?
Yeah, two great questions. So first, I'd be happy if all the tablets went away tomorrow. if you were to rewind 3 years ago, what we would have been talking about is tablet cannibalization of the PC industry. And so what's happened is the tablet actually has turned into a declining business, and the experience of tablets, one, is not as rich as laptops, but the second thing is that these devices have both capabilities, right? The detachables have really co-opted the benefit and done the benefit better because you have fully functioned keyboard. This is an elite keyboard from our EliteBook lineup. So you're able to do both. So from our standpoint, tablets will remain in decline and we'll continue to cannibalize them with thinner, better detachables. Will be a better option for customers. Astute enough about 18 months ago to say we're not going to participate in consumer tablets anymore. So $79 tablets, we said we're not going to do it. And actually, it was one of the first things that Dion said is, you know what, I'm not interested in chasing that market. It ended up looking a lot like the netbooks did. And a lot of people lost a lot of money and had to write off a lot of inventory. We weren't immune from it, but we had much less than anyone else in the industry. So we're not chasing that business. What we are doing is chasing commercial mobility with the detachables and this, you know, breaking edge 3-in-1 device. As far as touch, there were those who thought that the entire industry would go to touch. A couple years ago. It hasn't worked out that way. I think the latest is, roughly around 45% in the US consumer market, as an example. Touch penetration has declined. So we offer customers the choice. The reality of it is the Win 10 experience is better on touch. And that's just a fact. If you look at Net Promoter Score is higher when they have touch. So we try to offer as much touch as possible. We also see touch as a differentiator versus the Apple ecosystem, of at least the Apple PCs. But we're not going to force it down customers' throats. If they don't want it, and again, it goes back to price, feature, value. Are they willing to pay for it? We manage that, and there's a subset who don't, and we offer them choices.
I think we have time just for one last question. So let me ask Ron. You mentioned sort of the opportunity of this large install base that needs to get replaced. So can you just talk about, your view on, we went through a period where there was maybe not as much innovation. PC lifecycle got expanded. Replacement cycles got extended. Smartphones and tablets came up. There were multiple things that happened. Given the discussion around tablets now and these commercial mobility devices, how do you think about replacement rates in both in commercial and consumer at a high level? How many years is it taking, as you're noticing at your install base, how fast are people actually coming back to upgrade?
The reality is there were a lot of folks on the sidelines because of Win 8, because of a lack of transition on the desktop side of the house from an Intel standpoint, and not enough innovation on the PC side. And that's why we're so excited about driving innovation. Can you hand me that folio? Let me give you a great example of something that, in our view, would drive. How many people here have, or do I have it? How many people here have Jabber Pucks? Anybody? All right, only one. So Jabber Puck is a speaker and a microphone that you use for conferencing. So this is the new Elite Folio, the world's thinnest commercial laptop. But not only is the world's thinnest laptop, but we also built in Skype conferencing buttons into this. We also built in a microphone that's as powerful as the high-end Jabber Puck and speakers, so that if you're on a conference call, Oh, here's a Jabberpuck right here. So this is a often seen accoutrement inside at least HP, and I guess Bank of America as well. And if you flatten this out, it can be a conferencing device. So we're trying to drive devices that increase that refreshment rate. Combined with Win10, combined with the work that Intel is doing, we think that we have the arsenal to do it.
Great products. I think we're just about out of time here. So appreciate you taking the time. Thanks a lot, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you very much.